Coaches, before we jump into today's episode, we are officially in Green 13 season. If you're not familiar with Green 13, it is one of our favorite things that we do every year. At the end of April, early May, we open up nominations for coaches to nominate any of their athletes they think are deserving of our National Green Award. Athletes have been demonstrating leadership and character at the highest level on their teams, in their schools, and in their communities. We narrow down all the nominations to 13 athletes. And thanks to our friends at Chick-fil-A, each of those athletes get free Chick-fil-A for a year. It's incredible. In addition, they get a bunch of Lead 'Em Up gear and national recognition. Green 13 is an opportunity for us as a program and you as a coach to celebrate your athletes. Log into your portal today and nominate any of your athletes that are deserving and worthy of our Green 13 Award. Once again, nominations are open for a two-week span at the end of April and early May every year. Go in, let's celebrate your athletes, and let's see if they are deserving of this year's Green 13.
You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A.
Thank you for hanging with us today. I'm Adam alongside Kyle, as always, and we are joined by our good friend and business owner and author, entrepreneur, father, husband, many, many titles that goes down the list, our good friend, Mr. Andrew Simpson. Andrew, hello there.
Hello. I love hanging out with you guys. This is going to be fun.
Man, we're so thankful for you for many different reasons. Obviously, we've got a great friendship, you know, that's really kind of elevated over the last couple of years. And, you know, you and I have been able to really link up and work on a variety of different things. You've helped me so much from a mentor standpoint and just, you know, you're a few years ahead from a business standpoint in the sense of running your own business. So there's been a lot I've been able to kind of learn from you, but you've also helped us significantly, not only as Players Fitness Performance, PFP, which we'll talk about here in a second, sponsored a few schools with Lead 'Em Up and helped get that into places. You know, you also have helped pour into our business here at Lead 'Em Up. You know, we some back end stuff, strategy, structure, foundational work there that you've been very generous. And Andrew, I just want to say before we start, man, appreciate you for all that you've done for Lead 'Em Up, all you've done for me. And it's an honor to have you on the show, man.
Well, man, I'll tell you, I recommend good movies to people, right? But when there's an exceptional one, I'll do anything to blast it out to the world. And that's literally how I think of Lead 'Em Up and what you guys do. And so that's not going to stop, man. I want to see you guys spread your impact globally.
Hey, we appreciate that. Certainly, as we keep growing. No, Andrew is today. This is an exciting week here because at the time of recording, this is launch week for your upcoming book. So by the time you're listening to this, it will be out and about and fully available for everybody and anyone. But we are going to be digging in just so individuals listening know this is actually your third book. So this book that's launching this week is called The Unstoppable Athlete, 12 Keys to Unlock Your Full Potential. The only one who can stop you is you. I love that little line that's thrown in there, but really, mindset, confidence, and peak performance habits for teen and college athletes who play sports. That's really the core of where this is headed. This is actually your third book, though. Talk about your first two books. So it's The Youth Truth and then Athlete, I'm Talking to You. Talk a little bit about those and how those have helped kind of position where this book is entering into the equation.
Yeah, well, the first book, that one was the one that was just a burning hot message that was just in my soul, right? Like I was witnessing what was happening in youth sports, parents fist fighting at sports games, coaches berating players on the field, and consequently athletes experiencing more anxiety and stress and burnout from sports than ever before. And it's almost like it was becoming normalized to the point where it's like, oh yeah, that's just how sports are. And I didn't accept that. My team and I were like, something needs to be done about this. And so after having worked with at the time about, you know, 3,000, 4,000 athletes over a 6-7 year span, we realized like, hey, we've cracked the code on what it takes to help an athlete not only reach their full potential and be successful as an athlete, but also how to build them up as young men and women, right? And how to encourage them and help them be healthy mentally, physically, emotionally. And so took all that, put it into a book, and the book is broken out into three parts. Part one is if you're in the youth sports industry, part one of the Youth Truth is all about just shining a spotlight on the current state of youth sports, right? Let's just talk about it. Open, honest, the raw, real truth about where injuries are at. Injuries are at an all-time high in climbing. And then part two is all about love-powered leadership. So we think that the best way to lead an athlete to greatness and to keep them healthy, mentally, emotionally, physically, is to lead with love. And I love when coaches kind of press back on me on that, because they're like, oh, you mean like everyone gets a trophy kind of deal? It's like, no. Like, leading with love means you're going to do what is in the best interest of that young man or woman, no ifs, ands, or buts, which sometimes means challenging them, calling them out, pushing them, disciplining them. Like, this is what love does. And so part two of that book is all about love-powered leadership principles to help you lead your athletes better. And then part three of that book is the mindset. And so for us, we think that mindset matters most. If you can change the way an athlete thinks and believes about themselves, then you can ultimately help them impact their performance. So that was the first book, The Youth Truth. And the second one, Athlete, I'm Talking to You, The 7 Mindset Hacks to Dominate in Sports and Life, that was in response to the I call it a mental health crisis in youth athletics and college athletes, especially. 2022, suicides hit an all-time high. It seemed like every other week we would look at the news and there'd be another college athlete who had just taken their own life. And again, becoming normal, right? And when something starts to become normal, we start to say, oh, that's just the way it is. And so I kind of figured out there was a lot of pointing fingers at coaches and parents and society. And like, that's true, right? Like, we are pushing our kids to the limit and putting them on this pedestal, which creates pressure. So that's true and that's fine. But how's that going to help an athlete take control of their mindset so that they don't go down a dark path? And so these 7 mindset hacks are just 7 different things that I have taught athletes over the years, that regardless of what your situation is, what your circumstances are, if you're experiencing chronic injuries, if you're experiencing a career-ending injury, this is how you can still have a great life. And it starts with having a great mindset. So that was the second book. And today we're going to dig into the third one and see how we can help all of your listeners get better and become more unstoppable.
Hey, that's certainly the plan, Andrew. And thank you for the background there. And if you haven't checked out those previous books, certainly do so. But unstoppable athlete. And just so you know, for those listening, Andrew owns a fitness facility, a company that has multiple locations in and around the Maryland area. And just from your own credibility standpoint, your gym is different. And it's different in large part because it's almost a hybrid gym of sorts. And I don't know if this is the right way to explain it, but this is how I'll attempt to explain it. It's a hybrid gym. Obviously, it is strength, conditioning, fitness, right? You go and it's got every piece of equipment you can think of, turf fields, all that. But there's a major intentionality, a carved out section within the training that the athletes experience for mindset. And it's intentional. It's not just a 2-minute little pep talk before the workout, nothing like that. It's an intentional hybrid of mindset and fitness, because you need both, right? And essentially, to your point of the unstoppable, fitness will only get you so far. Strength and condition will only get you so far. You need the mindset in addition. And you've been doing this for years, because you started PFP when?
2014.
So when you talk about, you know, had a chance to work with 3,000, 4,000, et cetera, athletes, right? That is the lens and the platform where you've been working with these athletes that has helped fuel your inspiration. I just wanted to give a little backstory on that, so everyone listening knew kind of where you're coming from and where that experience happens. There are so many different elements in this book. Obviously, you're talking 12 kind of keys that you kind of hone in on. And first off, and we're going to go through many of them. Man, how does someone go about narrowing that down, right? Because I feel like, you know, the mindset and a healthy mindset of athlete is such a large topic. So how do you even begin? I think you call it mind mapping, or I think that may be the term you use. How do you begin narrowing that down to the list that we're about to unpack to hear? How do you do that?
Well, so like I shared with you over coffee the other week, writing a book, the right way to do it from what I found is to create a mind map, like you said, and put all your topics around this big old, it's a big old spider web, right? The central topic is how do I become an unstoppable athlete? But then all the other topics, right, that could fit into the book, and then figuring out which ones go together, right? Which ones are habits that we can combine? Which ones are, you know, mindsets short term? Which ones are more longer term success mindsets? And so really, but the core of the book was written because I was all the times that parents would say, Andrew, thanks for saying this, but man, I've been saying this to my athlete for years. And then finally, you know, you say it and they start to listen, right? Like all those types of moments, I wanted to take those and put them into the book so that when a parent gets this book for their athlete, it's like the parent knows, right? Like my athlete's going to get exactly what I've been wanting them to hear all along, right? If you want to be the best you can be, you have to work hard, you have to be disciplined, and you have to prioritize rest and recovery and sleep and not social media all night long. Like those types of things, just like giving a book out, a book for kids where parents can know that it's the stuff that they've been trying to tell their athletes for years. And then they can hear it differently now because a coach said it instead of them. And so, yeah, the book's just about 100 pages. And so an athlete can consume it in 4 pages a day in less than 30 days. I didn't want any athlete to ever have an excuse to not read it.
That nails it. Yeah. They may still find an excuse nonetheless, but I think you've eliminated, you reduced it significantly.
Yeah, you know, Andrew, not only just for athletes, but as a parent myself, I've got an athlete that's getting more involved. He's 13. And as a father, I can't wait to read the book. When I see the topics here for the chapters, every single one of them speaks to something that, like you just mentioned, we have either shared with him or share with athletes we coach. But one of the things that jumps out right away is the second key is run your own race and ways to ignore the lies that increase pressure and fear. What came out of your experience that really inspired this chapter? I'd love for you to share a little bit more about why this is so important for athletes to run their own race. I think it's such a key point for them to take home.
So anytime we see something becoming more and more serious, and as a result, more and more issues arising from it, like youth sports, we should always start to pay attention to what are the common things, the common sayings, the common things people are believing, and then challenge them, right? And so one of them is more is better, right? If you just do more, right? More, play on more teams, train more, do more, then you'll ultimately be better. And so that was one of the myths that we wanted to debunk in that chapter, because the truth is, and what enduringly great athletes know, is that oftentimes less is more. Right? When I have a day of rest each week, I can actually play better. When I take time off of training is when my muscles actually grow. When I stop trying to be the best at everything and instead say, you know what, I'm going to focus on these 2 or 3 strengths as a player instead of all my weaknesses, I can all of a sudden start to really hone my skills and hone my craft. And so more is not always better. And so that was one of the 3 lies that we wanted to debunk. The second was never be satisfied. Never be satisfied. And this is just something that has just started to infiltrate the minds of any person, not just athlete, but any person that wants to be successful in what they do. There's this lie out there that on the surface is motivating. It seems motivational and inspirational. Never be satisfied, right? You can see it on a t-shirt. But when you think about it, like what would a career in sports where you were never satisfied feel like? You know, like you would look back on it and it would be terrible, right? Like never be satisfied. I found that what was true was if you actually reflect on where you've been and the progress you've made, we talked about this last time we were on a podcast, but if you reflect on where you've been, the progress you've made, and you can actually pat yourself on the back and say, I did a great job, I'm making progress as a leader, as a player, then satisfaction actually creates more motivation. So that was the second one, never be satisfied. And then the third was, if I rest, they will leapfrog me. like they, right? Whoever they is, right? If I rest, they'll leapfrog me. And it's this FOMO lie, the fear of missing out, this lie in club sports and in youth sports today that is, again, driving kids to injury, chronic injury, all-time high, burnout, exhaustion, all these things. It's like anytime an adult operates from a place of fear, we make really dumb decisions. And think about it for a 14, 15, 17-year-old young man or woman, right? They're operating out of fear. You think that's going to last long term? You know, something's going to give. So that was the third lie, is if I rest, they will leapfrog me. And so we wanted to debunk those. And then the rest of the book obviously sets up to continue to knock those objections down.
I love that first one, especially. I just had a conversation with a fellow parent this past week, and he shared that sentiment with his young son and daughter. Like, they are fearing as parents that they're not doing the right thing by getting the kid involved in travel ball. And they're only like 6, 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
And that I see that all across the board. And you know, I love that you have a heart to speak to that. And I can't wait to read the chapter on it. But that first point really kind of speaks out to what I think a lot of people are experiencing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's many. I mean, all three of those are so on point, frankly, right? They're mm-hmm. all extremely on point. And I think one thing about those lies, I think one thing that makes lies so scary is because they are often layered with truth, right? And they can be deceitful. They can deceive you because they're not like bogus lies, like the sky is orange or the sky is, you know, black. Like, that's a lie that's clearly like not real. Okay.
Yep.
These are lies that have like elements of truth, right? There is some truth in that. So all of a sudden, like, you can rationalize each one of those statements and make a case that it's accurate, that I need to live into it. I just don't think people, to your point, like, spend the time to actually examine the underbelly of them. Like, at what's the cost? And you're totally right. And I think those are all accurate. And, you know, once again, we're not going to go through all 12, although I would love to go through all 12 of them, right? But that's just not reality here.
Well, I'll tell you this, Adam, just real quick, is each chapter is written to basically one of two different populations of athletes who the book was written for. And I didn't really clarify this in the book, but one population is the athlete who they have started to settle. They've started to lower their standards for themselves because they didn't become a starter. They didn't make a team. And so now all of a sudden they're just like, you know what? I'll never reach my full potential. And they don't end up reaching their full potential. That chapter number two, key number two, wasn't necessarily for that athlete. Chapter number two is written for the other population of an athlete, which is the one who is the striver, the one that's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes, literally whatever it takes. And I don't care what the cost is. I'm going to be successful and reach the next level. It was to that person to help them realize that the way to do that and to not look back on your sports career and regret it or sustain a career ending injury or whatever is to overcome those three lies.
Makes sense. And I'm going to be selfish here, and I'm actually going to have examined the key that I'm actually very interested in for my own personal. I want you to lead me up here, Andrew. Key eight, balancing patience and persistence. Oh my, I mean, I get it. How do you do it?
Yeah.
Well, those are obviously things that are on opposite ends of the spectrum. They're speaking to two very different dynamics in our mindset. How do you balance it, and how do you know you're balancing it well if you're an athlete?
So the third P there is perspective. And as a teenage athlete playing sports or a college athlete playing sports, something that you don't have much of is perspective. And this is why parents will always say to me, like, Andrew, like, my kid is actually doing pretty good, or, you know, I believe they're going to do great things, but like, it's like, if they don't make massive progress in 2 weeks, right? If they start working on their weaknesses and then 2 weeks later, if they're not like significantly improved on it, they're beating themselves up. They're like, it's not working, right? They throw in the towel. It's like, no, that's the patience aspect, right? Like, as an athlete, patience has to be something that you don't just try to get. Like, it has to become you. Otherwise you will not be an enduringly great athlete. And so one of the ways to do it is to actually set clear goals, you know, set clear goals and do it consistently. So athletes that are in our mindset program, our coaching program, every 90 days, they set goals. They set three, we're not going to get into all these, but they set three levels of goals, survive goals. What would it look like for me to just survive, right? Just like not even make a ton of progress, just barely survive. Succeed goals, which are the goals that are going to make me actually feel successful. And then let's dream big and have some faith and have these transform goals. Transform goals are like all the stars aligned. I don't even know how that happened, right? God clearly had a hand in this. Like, this was awesome. And so we have them set these three tiers, three levels of goals so that, and it happens consistently, so that inevitably halfway through their season or halfway through those 90 days, the athlete's starting to beat themselves up because they're not doing quote unquote perfect. And all I say to them is, hey, tell me what your goals were when you started the season. And then they're like, oh yeah. And then they go back and look at them. And I'm like, all right, which ones are on track? They're like, actually, like a lot of them are on track. So we set goals to actually be more patient with ourselves and don't just set one goal. Cause I think the other problem is a lot of athletes just set the big goal, right? I want to play in college someday. It's like, what are all the little goals? So like goal setting is a habit and that's actually how you become more patient with yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see how. So let me just process it. It does make sense. So an athlete sitting there 45 days into the 90, all of a sudden that inner tendency of impatience begins to creep up. I just don't feel like I'm moving forward. I don't feel like I'm getting, you know, advancing at the level or the speed that I want. I'm not seeing the results. I'm not physically aware of it. You can go back to the goals, and then the goals, all of a sudden the athlete begins to see the goals in paper and says, well, I actually am. It's almost like let me think here. It's almost as if we trick ourselves or maybe we even change our own mindset halfway through the process to begin to want something greater, more ongoing.
Yep. It's the moving stick, man. It's that moving target of like always wanting more. And so, yeah, setting those goals and then keeping them in front of you makes it more factual with your progress instead of just your feeling, right? Because I'll have athletes all the time that have a couple of bad games and they think that a couple of bad games is reason to hit the panic button. Like a couple of bad games is pretty normal for an athlete that's playing year-round sports, three different teams, which most athletes are, right? It's like to have a couple bad games. So again, perspective. And so that P, the patience P, is for the athlete that is just like never satisfied with themselves. They believe those three lies we talked about earlier. The other P, the persistence, that is the athlete that has gotten knocked back once or twice. They've had an injury. They've had a setback. They didn't make the team. And then they start to put their head down and they start to take their foot off the gas pedal. That athlete in that moment and in general, they need to be persistent and they need that motivation of like, keep going. You're almost there. If you give up now, you're not going to see that great thing on the other side. And too often from a parent perspective, there is a parent edition to the book, by the way, that hasn't officially come out yet. But from a parent perspective, too often parents overvalue the persistence P and they undervalue the patience P. And so the only things that parents and sometimes coaches too are asking is, hey, how do we get better? How do we move forward? How do we stay motivated? And so that patience P over here though, because in general, you guys tell me, I mean, if you can relate to me, like that's the P I struggle with. I don't struggle with the persistence part. I keep going and I'll keep hitting my head against the ceiling, even if it hurts, right? I'll keep going. But the patient side is what I've personally had to develop. So this was a personal chapter for me that I wrote, chapter 8.
Yeah. I mean, nice. I hear you on the persistence. I mean, that is, I'll add another P, how I view persistence. I view it as a positive thing as most
absolutely.
People do.
Yep.
Most people
absolutely
do. Patience is tough. It's tough. And frankly, Andrew, that you've helped me in that regard, just individually. You know, when you think about some of the things that we've implemented in Lead 'Em Up, like the EOS and like to gain the traction, you know, it definitely changes the mindset a little bit, you know, when you start looking at your year in a different increment and quarterly increments and such. You know, and really just more like another P, trusting the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that patience kind of links to that one. And it's interesting, you know, people struggle with the process because you need benchmarks throughout it to make sure that you're still trending in the right direction and you're still, you know, fulfilling the process. But it's an interesting balance. Listen, you wrote it for you. You wrote it for me. Thank you for that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point, Adam. I think a lot of it, I'm looking at this as well. It's like, wow, I could really learn from this and can't wait to read it. That parent version sounds incredible. Another topic I think that
I will say real quick, Kyle, like it's interesting you bring that up, because as I've kind of began going through it, I've had a chance to, you know, get a little pre-copy and all that. And I've been going through it. It's been helpful for me too. I think the one thing, as I continue to grow in my personal leadership and studying human psychology and behavioral therapy and all this stuff, the more I've learned that grown-ups, adults are more like kids than they think they are. We are more childlike in our mentality than we sometimes perceive. You know, we think, I'm a grown-up. I'm an adult. I know what I'm doing. I'm grown. That is far from the truth. I mean, when you really study human behavior and adults and such, I mean, you know, their tendency to react rather than emotionally respond. It's very childlike, you would say. You know, their emotional outbursts or these moments of pouting, right? And these moments of lack of discipline and lack of self-control in certain situations. These are just adult forms of what we think are childlike behaviors, but they're very much the same. And that's why for us in Lead 'Em Up, we always say we're not team building, we're people building. And it's why we can often take the same general curriculum, work with kids and with adults.
That's right.
We're all dealing with it. We just think we've got it figured out because we're a grown up. And like, that is so not the case as you study deeper. So Kyle, the fact that you brought that up, sorry, I just wanted to make that note because
it's great.
I've felt that too. Like this is, it's for athletes. Like don't think because you're 35 or you're 45 that these opportunities to grow because they're disguised as like more of a younger approach doesn't apply to you. You will miss an opportunity if you deflect it over to them while disregarding what it could do to you. And don't miss that opportunity because we're all in it together. Andrew, what you're about to chime in on that?
Well, it just made me laugh a little bit because I'm thinking about my 5-year-old son, and he is really not good at losing, like at all. But I've decided I'm not going to let him win at everything, because if he doesn't know how to lose with me, then he's going to go out in the real world and he's going to lose poorly in the real world, right? So I beat him, not all the time, but enough times to where I can impart life lessons. And honestly, like when this came up for the first time and I beat him in a game and he had a complete meltdown because he lost, I was able to share with them like, hey, buddy, like I actually struggle with this too. Like I don't always lose well. Do you want to know something that I do to make myself feel better though? And so like, I think any shortcoming that your young athlete has, if you're a parent or coach, listen, any shortcoming they have, you are the person that is primed to help them with it by either sharing how you used to struggle with it and you overcame it, or you still currently do struggle with it. And in that case, that's a partnership. Now you and him or her can work together to make progress in this area. So I love that you share that, Adam. And that's what that made me think of.
Yeah, that's a great point. Share similar struggles with my youngest child as well and having some of those talks. But I love that you bring that up, Andrew. That's fantastic.
Hey, this is Kayla from Chick-fil-A, and this is today's Leadership Nugget. One of the biggest mistakes that you can make in your leadership journey is assuming that your talent will get you places. And we have a phrase that hangs in the restaurant that says, be the hardest worker in the room because opportunity comes to those who bring more than just talent to the table. So sure, you might bread a chicken sandwich the fastest, or your milkshakes might be perfectly portioned each and every time, but leadership is more than these things, and we're not going to promote someone based on talent alone. It's about the people that embody the values of hustle and dedication, the ones that show up early and stay late. They volunteer for that special project. They engage in feedback conversations, and they always position themselves as a humble student of the business. Those that stand out to me are the ones that choose to be the hardest worker in the room, not necessarily the one that has the most talent. Now let's jump back into the episode.
So on the theme of learning and growing as adults here, when I look at the book, I'm very intrigued and want to learn more about chapter 11, maximizing ultradian rhythm. So, Andrew, I've never heard of this phrase or this term before. Would love for you to enlighten me and the listeners. What does this mean and how is this going to make us better?
I'm hoping it refers to sleep because I love sleeping. And if this book is about that, I want to like hang it up. I want to share with the family and be like, listen, I'm just trying to stay fresh by maximizing my ultradian rhythm. Listen, key number 11, leave me alone.
Well, if you're, again, if you subscribe to the philosophy that you should rest when you're dead or that rest is for the weak, then this isn't going to really work for you. But if you recognize that the way we were designed and created is to sprint and recover, then this will really help you. So your ultradian rhythms are, it's literally how we were designed, which is to sprint, recover. But you can take that same principle in a micro moment, right? Sprint 10 yards, rest or walk for 10 yards, sprint 10 yards, walk for 10 yards. Like you can take that same thing and apply it at a more macro level within your week. Right? Work 6 days, rest one. Work 6 days, rest one. Play sports for 12 weeks and then take a week of downtime. Every year, take a season off, right? That's more like the macro level for ultradian rhythms and how they work. But at a physiological level, it's been studied and studied, and it's proven that you can't really do anything successfully for not more than 90 minutes, right? Mental and energy, physical energy, more than 90 minutes without your body really truly needing a 30-minute break to fully recover. So put it into a practice scenario, right? A coach has a practice and it's 2 hours long and they only take quick 3-minute water breaks or 2-minute water breaks. They are not maximizing their ultradian rhythms. So mentally, the athletes aren't going to be dialed in and locked in the whole time. Physically, they're certainly not going to perform at their best. The longer you quote unquote sprint for, the longer of a true rest you should actually have. And that's just not an opinion. That's literally how we were wired. And so is it 90 and 30 exactly? No, it doesn't have to be 90 and 30 exactly. But I can guarantee you, you need more than you're currently doing in terms of that rest cycle. And that can be in a practice setting, in a training setting, or more macro, like a week, a month, a year.
Okay. As a coach, Adam, I want to get his opinion. Andrew, if you're designing a practice plan for our coaches out there and they have 2 hours, mm-hmm. what is the ideal time schedule that you're mapping out? If they're listening to this right now, they're like, okay, I'm going to take it from Andrew. He's the expert. I've got our season coming up. How should I design my practice in that 2-hour increment? What would be your suggestion on time, on fundamentals, whatever, not breaking it down, but just on field, on court versus the break time?
Well, before I go there, you've got to define what you're going to do during that rest time that's productive, because just sticking with the time frames isn't good enough, right? Like when you're exerting yourself physically, the best way to maximize your ultradian rhythms is to have a break that is a little bit more mental, right? Mm-hmm. When you're exerting yourself mentally, the best break is to have a physical break. So like, you know, when you're at a work day, right? You're working at a computer. What do most people do during their quote unquote rest? They get on their phone and they tax their mind even more. And then they wonder why they get drained little by little throughout the day. The best way to do it, per the way we are created physiologically, is after a mental bout of energy, right? Working at a computer, get up and do something physical for 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So I think every coach, if they're really trying to crush their practices and get the most out of them, like a John Wooden did, which John Wooden, by the way, his practices lasted 90 minutes. He wanted to honor his players' time. He wanted to make sure that they gave the maximal energy and they were all locked in. And that was the expectation too. So it's actually a great thing for a coach to have shorter practices, because then they can demand more from their players and set a higher expectation. Anyone that thinks they can go all out for 2 to 3 hours at a practice, like that's just cruel and unkind. Like these kids got other stuff to do. They got school. They got other stuff going on that we want them to do. So, the way I would design a practice, this is more just fun. This is not prescriptive. I would always start the first 7 to 10 minutes with something mindset related, and then some shout outs. right? Get your team shouting each other out, recognizing and highlighting what you want repeated, right? So get some internal team shout outs going on. Hopefully they're centered around what you value as a team. After that, of course, a warm up. If it's going to be player led, let's make sure they actually do a good job, right? Let's not just do some like half-hearted Frankensteins. Like, I hate when I see warm-ups like that, right? Where it's like, you're wasting time right now. You might as well take that time and put it towards your rest intervals. So get a good warm-up. And then, you know, whatever else you got, your skills and drills. But from a rest recovery standpoint, if I've got 2 hours, I'm probably going hard for 45 minutes, 10-minute break. Going hard for 45 minutes, 10-minute break. And then maybe a 15 to 20 minute, you know, scrimmage or something going hard at the end. So that's more or less what I would do. But I think there's opportunity to be more intentional for every coach in terms of maximizing not just your time, but your energy. That is probably the number one thing I'll close with on that is if we want our athletes to perform better, we should focus more on energy management and not time management of a practice. I think that's key for any high performer in life.
Mm. So good.
That's great.
You know, as you were sharing just about rest, you know, I heard a quote not that long ago that really shifted my perspective. And I think it may shift athletes and coaches' perspective. Like, I don't rest to get away from the work. I rest so I can do more of the work with better work.
Yep.
And I love that, right? It's not to like, oh, I need to get away. No, I rest so I can just come back to it better, stronger. Go harder, you know, and when you view it in that lens, then all of a sudden you're viewing is like almost like the rest becomes a propeller, right? It's like I'm resting so I can then be propelled back out to the craft and do it that much greater. So
here's actually, you know what that made me think of? Kyle, here's a better answer to your question. I would put my mental training into my practice during the rest times, right? Yeah. I would have my players a couple times at practice after they do a strong physical, whatever it is, skills, drills, and whatnot, I would have them take 5 to 10 minutes and visualize success for the next 20 to 30 minutes that they're going to be going hard, right? Because during games, that's what we want them doing, right? We don't want them just like zoning out. We want them like locked in and focusing on how am I going to perform at the next, when I get in the game or whatever the case. So that's what I would do. I was put mental skills training into my practices.
That's interesting. Point. I don't think people are doing that. I would imagine that their rest is simply a water break,
mm-hmm.
right? A quick little water break back in action.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe they'd be fearful that a 10, 15 minute mindset break would almost like do something negatively to the body. Mm-hmm. How would you speak to that? Because don't you want to keep it going, right? You don't want to get cold. You don't want to stiffen up. So all of a sudden, if you go too long on the mental, then are they stiff coming back out for the physical? Or is it not really that big of a deal because it's only 10 to 15 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, depending on what sport we're talking about, that's pretty realistic, right? If your players have to, you know, sit on the bench or they have a halftime, it's like that's the way a game really works, you know, breaking up into quarters or a halftime. Or again, you come out of the game and you're sitting on the bench. So, I mean, yeah, 15 minutes after 60 minutes of going hard, that's probably too long, I would say, right, for a practice. But 7 to 10 minutes? You know, your body's not going to cool down that much unless it was never warmed up to begin with.
Yeah, fair point. Hey, last one I want to dig into here. Once again, there's 12 keys that you're helping athletes understand in order to become more unstoppable and unlock their full potential. Avoiding the 5 passion killers, right? I'm intrigued by this because I think passion can be one of your greatest competitive advantages. I really do. I mean, you meet someone who's passionate, they become, it's infectious. It's got a magnetic pull when you meet someone who's really passionate. I know for me, like, I think my passion, I'm passionate about almost everything. Like I'm passionate about so many things. And I think it's been one of the things that have helped me successfully, that people enjoy the passion that I bring. It's huge. And athletes, frankly, I think they need to spend more time talking about their passion, unleashing it. That's why I love that you've got back-to-back kind of chapters. Chapter 9, key 9, ignite your passion, followed by key 10, avoid the 5 passion killers. Because let me just be honest, there are way too many young people that are relatively passionless. They are lifeless. They are lethargic. They can't even greet you with a generalized energetic greeting. You know, it's like, bro, you okay? You know, you good there? Like, are you sleepy? You know, it's like, dude, wake up. You know, it's like, hey, how you doing? Fine. You know, it's just like, oh my gosh, there's no energy, no life, no joy, no passion, no abundance, no flourishing. And it's one of those. That's why we teach Nine Clap right out of the gate and lead them up. Yeah. You change the energy, the passion in the room, it uplifts. Well, five passion killers, I get the sense that these young athletes are probably being killed by these five things. They're probably experiencing it. It's probably why they're just kind of going through the motions, why so many athletes are gray, as we reference in our green team scale. Mm-hmm. What are they? Let's unpack those.
Yeah. So this chapter, I wrote this chapter because a while back I was working with an athlete. Her name was Rebecca, just rock star soccer player, had it all going on. And then she tears her ACL and she's out for, 10 months, 11 months. And it devastated her, but I kind of saw it coming because she was the kind of athlete that was playing on multiple teams year round, never had a season off. She trained, but when she trained, her parents really wanted her going hard and they didn't value the recovery. And so we would always kind of like butt heads on that. And one day this girl, she gets a season-ending injury and she's out for 11 months. And so I met with her, did a mindset session, helping her with just kind of like how to get through this. And then about a month later, she comes into our session together and she's like really, really happy. She's like excited. I'm like, what's going on? She's like, Andrew, she said, tearing my ACL was probably the best thing that's happened to me. I said, okay, tell me more. I like where you're going with this. Tell me more. She said, it made me realize how much I actually love playing soccer again. I'm like, do athletes really need to have a season-ending injury in order to have that passion reignited, right? Like you either are going to be forced to take time off, which that'll make you miss your sport a lot. And then your passion will soar, right? You'll be forced to, or you'll be intentional and you'll decide to strategically take time off. And so these five passion killers, it's not even injuries, right? The injuries are the kind of passion killer that you don't want to ever have to, right, to get. One is not having any hobbies, right? No life outside of sports. And as somebody who struggles with hobbies and a life outside of just family and what I do professionally and just my mission, like I get it, right? I get the whole hobbies thing. I still think that, playing with my kids is a hobby, but a lot of people say it's not. So I got to find another hobby. But having no hobbies, no balance, no life outside of sports, that will kill your passion. So even if you don't want to have it, you got to find hobbies. Another one is if any of us or any athlete is in their weakness zone too often, right? Things that they're not good at and they're not using their strengths and their gifts, that's a sure way to burn yourself out and to not have passion. So if you want to keep your passion high, you got to be trying to stay in your strength zones and doing the things that you're good at.
First of all, love that one, Andrew. Oh my gosh. I mean, I can speak to that one. Whenever I have to do a task that is outside of my zone, outside of my sweet spot, it starts draining me before I even have to do it.
Right.
And, if I could get someone else to do it, I mean, don't put me in front of an Excel sheet having to like data entry. It's just not me. You will get so much less. So I love that. Yeah, I can relate to that. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah. And some of these, by the way, like these passion killers, it's not like you, any of us, or an athlete, a teenage athlete, can control these things 100% either, right? Because, hey, if your coach puts you in a position and says, hey, I don't want you in that position anymore, I think that you need to be doing this in order to give the team the best chance to win, that might mean that you're going to be less in your strength zone or your gift zone, but there's still ways to go about using your gifts and strengths if you know what yours are and that they're beyond just your skills. Next one is if you don't receive, and we know this, if we don't receive positive encouragement, recognition from people, our passion starts to diminish. As an athlete, if you were dealt a bad hand and you have a coach who does not like to give praise or recognition, then the way that you can still keep your passion high is by giving more of it. Because if we give more of it, then we'll receive it from others like our teammates, which leads into the next one, not having connection with our teammates. That's a choice. That's something as an athlete you can do. And athletes who have better connections with their teammates and just like are friends with your teammates, you'll be more passionate as you play. And then lastly, if you don't have a compelling vision for your future, you don't have goals, like we talked about earlier, you don't have your goals written down, you'll lose passion because what are you really working towards? So every athlete should look within and say, which of these five passion killers are currently, am I currently at risk of? And then how do I get those things up? How do I fill those gaps a little bit?
Fantastic. You know, Andrew, there's so many different dynamics, each one, so much value for the reader. Love that it's under 100 pages. You know, let's just kind of get right to it, you know, and jump right in and just get down to the meat. And once again, coaches, parents, certainly encourage you to take advantage of the book. Kyle, anything you want to share or add in before we wrap up here?
I mean, this is all fantastic. One of the things that I was just thinking about and looking back through kind of the titles and everything is, you know, the book is called Unstoppable Athlete, but Andrew, what you've done is really taken like a holistic approach to becoming that unstoppable athlete. And it's a lot of the times people reference an unstoppable athlete with how big and how fast and how strong they are. And that's certainly a component of it. But what you've done with these 12 keys to unlock the full potential is really all encompassing. It's that holistic athlete. It's that full athlete who's able to, you know, get into that full potential. And, you know, I'm going to be buying this book and giving it to my son and making him read it. Like you said, it's only 100 pages, but, you know, I think the great thing about it is the way that you approached it and what you're trying to really provide the reader, the athlete, and the parents involved here. So great work, and can't wait to read all 100 pages of it.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Andrew, if you had to point, you may not have prepared for this, to a professional athlete that you think kind of captures the unstoppable athlete from what we know, from what we see. Obviously, we're not in it, but just a player. I have a player in mind that comes to mind for me. Kyle, I'm actually curious.
I have
one. You're both on the spot. You have one?
Yeah, I have one. Yep, comes right to mind.
Who comes to mind for you?
Mine is Giannis.
Giannis. Tell me why.
Well, when you look at his backstory, when you look at where he came from and how he got involved to it, like Andrew said earlier, it was like he was this late bloomer, late developer, someone that wasn't necessarily training for a specific sport all along. And he didn't really get involved until like 14, 15 years old. And we see what he is now. But when I think of someone like that, he immediately comes to mind.
Mm. Mm. All right. Andrew, you want to go? You want me to go?
Sure, I'll go. It's the person I wrote about in the book. And it's someone that, you know, you ever been in the conversation where it's like, who is the greatest basketball player of all time? I immediately say Jordan every time, right? I'm like MJ all the way. But when I think about who is the greatest basketball player of all time, who's the most successful as a person in life and sport, I say LeBron. And I write about LeBron in the book because I studied LeBron a little bit in writing this book. And from a standpoint of having balance and longevity and staying healthy and doing things outside of sport, like philanthropic efforts and having hobbies, having a life, hearing what his value placed on recovery, which it makes sense for his longevity, but his value on recovery and sleep and taking care of his body, not putting junk in it. Like when I learned about all of that with him, and again, there's probably stuff I'm missing because I don't get the whole sneak peek behind LeBron's life, right? But just seeing all that, I'm like, that's an unstoppable athlete, right? Physically, but then also like he hasn't been stopped in his career and he hasn't, from what I can see, experienced, you know, the mental breakdowns, the setbacks and whatnot. So there's a lot to learn about him, whether you like him or not. Again, he's not the person I talk about. I always argue for Jordan in that conversation. But man, there's a lot about LeBron that you can learn if you're a young athlete.
That's a pretty fantastic one. That's a pretty fantastic when you think about all the different keys here. Yeah. I was going to add one that's a little more under the radar, but yep. I think the story paints the picture of being an unstoppable athlete. I say Kirk Cousins.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins, I mean, if you had a chance to watch the Netflix series, The Quarterback, I mean, you're talking about a guy that very, very big in with his family, right? He's got his two boys. He's doing so much with his family at their schools, reading and just really pouring into that. I mean, during the series there, because we had the producer of The Quarterback show on our podcast, Tim Rumpf. He's a local Watkins Mill guy. He went to Watkins Mill.
Way.
Yeah, and he's actually producing the new one that's coming out called Receivers.
Okay.
Where they're spotlighting the receivers. But Kirk Cousins in that series, you know, he's meeting with the counselor, the team counselor, the mental counselor. Mm-hmm. He's got his masseuse. He's got his physical therapist. He's got days on Tuesday where he doesn't pick up anything, film, football, schedule, anything, but it is strictly family, wife time, right? He doesn't get caught up in the party, and he goes home and he talks about, I need to go home and rest. He needs to, you know, start his recovery process. I mean, you just look at it. He's been dealt constantly, like been the underdog, right? Drafted into Washington. He wasn't the starter. He was the backup, you know, and he keeps just fighting through, persevering, ignoring the noise, staying passionate on the craft, keep working on himself. He just had an Achilles injury. And what does he do in recovery? Man, he recovers so well that he lands another huge contract in Atlanta, right? Where now he's ready to lead Atlanta. I mean, I think that all of these stories, whether it's LeBron, Giannis, or Kirk, it's reminding us that you want to be unstoppable. It's essentially what Andrew has laid out in this book. It's this holistic approach, managing it in a full picture, and all areas need to be operating at a high level.
Yep.
In order to allow you to be best positioned to once again be unstoppable. Andrew, appreciate you so much for coming in and hanging with us today. If you get a chance, absolutely check out the book, Unstoppable Athlete. We'll be sharing it on our social pages. And if you've missed the previous two books, once you read that, go check out the other two books as well. A lot of great resources in the book also, different workbooks and guides and such with QR codes that you can access all that. So it's essentially like $15 on Amazon, but it's $15 for like a whole library of resources. You could almost argue with all the different things you're providing. Andrew, appreciate you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Well, on behalf of the entire Lead 'Em Up team, I am Adam. He is Kyle. Until next time, have fun and lead 'em up.